It's the Talon Talk Podcast, the official podcast of Morehead State University Athletics. A reminder, you can access this podcast on MSUEagles.com, the official website of Eagle Athletics, and a variety of other avenues, including Spotify and Stitcher. This is episode number 10. On today's show, host Matt Schabert visits with women's basketball alum and MSU Athletics Hall of Famer Julie Muntz. Julie was an Eagle from 1988 to 92 and ranks fifth in career scoring with 1,692 points. She is also one of only three players in program history with more than 1,500 points and 1,000 rebounds. She also holds the school career record for free throws made. Julie is now a health and physical education teacher at Lexington's newest high school, Frederick Douglass. Thanks for listening. Here is our show.
Welcome in to another episode of the Talon Talk podcast. And believe it or not, this is our 10th episode. Feels like we just started, but we are on number 10. And I'm Matt Schabert, your host, and I'm really glad to be joined by Julie Muntz today, a former Morehead State women's basketball player. And also in the, I just realized this actually today when I was going back to look it up, in our Hall of Fame as well. So we've had a couple of Hall of Famers on, and I'm really glad you've joined us to talk about your career here and what you're doing now, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, Matt, it's always great to be welcomed back by MSU. It's always have a special place in my heart for Morehead State. So I also grew up at in Morehead. So the family atmosphere is so strong there. And I just really enjoy my family ties that I have to Morehead. So it was always great just growing up there, and just felt like, you know, the opportunities that I had that Morehead gave me was second to none. I was always treated like with the best kept in mind. And just like, you know, when I was recruited out of high school, it was always nice because, you know, everybody knows you by name and know who you are. And, you know, they know your family, and they know all of your business and everything else. And I just know that when I was being recruited by Louisville, it was down to Morehead and Louisville. And I went on my last official visit at Louisville thinking like, oh, this is going to be it. And then I went on that visit. I was like, Mom, I can't do this. I go, this isn't Morehead. This doesn't feel like home. So I was like, I told the coaches right then and there, it's like, nope, my heart is set on Morehead. And so that was, I knew that was the place where I wanted to be and where I wanted to pursue my academics and athletic career. So I just wanted to keep it there in my hometown. So I have a special place for Morehead.
And that was actually leading into my next question. Oh, okay. If you had, and you hit it right on it, exactly. But I was going to talk about, you know, what a special place Morehead was for you, being from Morehead and staying home. And you mentioned Louisville. And so I guess your, you know, decision came down to just being at home. And, you know, I guess it was also special to be able to have family members, lots of them obviously from around here, that were able to just drive down the road and see you in Johnson Arena, you know, didn't have to go anywhere else. They could just come right down the road and see you play college basketball.
Oh, absolutely, Matt. And that was one of my points that that really wanted to keep me there in Morehead, because, you know, like I said, I had grown up there, and it was like, you know, we had a big following through girls basketball at Round County, and we had a huge fan base at Round County as well. And I feel like a lot of the fan base just continued over to Morehead when I went to Morehead State. So like when I said, like, you know that cliche that it takes a village to raise a child, I was definitely raised by the city of Morehead, where everybody has bought into, I feel like, my success that I've had there, that everybody's had a part in that. Just like, for example, when I was little, I remember somebody like Dr. Blevins taking me to go to those little competitions. I remember him taking me to Ashland. I remember growing up and playing against grown men at Laughlin when I was at the age of like, I don't know, like 10. And I would be down there every single day learning how to play basketball and learning how to play against tougher competition. And that's where I felt like I just being able to grow my love for the game. And I used to play against the faculty members when I was in middle school. And I used to play in their leagues because I wanted that higher competition against, you know, grown men and from the faculty of Morehead State. And they continued over and came, watched us play when I did play at Morehead. So everybody just, all the community members was really felt like they were behind me and my team. And then we had such a huge following there that that success continued over to Morehead.
And I was going to ask that kind of your style of game. You talked about being tough, and what's amazing is as you look at the record book, and I know sometimes people are, you know, gloat about those things, but I know you're probably not one of those, but you still own the record for most free throws made in Morehead State history, over 500 free throws. So was that kind of your style of game to, I know that being a taller player, being a kind of a post player inside game, was that kind of your style to, you know, take it to the basket and try to draw those fouls? Obviously, having shot that many free throws and shooting them well too, over 70% in your career too.
Well, Matt, there's kind of a story behind that. It's kind of funny for two reasons. Number one, yeah, that was my style of play because, like I said, when I started at Laughlin when I was very, very young, I used to get my tail beat and get my shot blocked and get, you know, I was roughed up and like they didn't pull any punches. Like, I'm just saying that they were really tough and rough to me as well. So I kind of had to learn how to survive on my own playing the game with that, the tough physical, I want to call like a Charles Barkley type of, you know, you had to, you know, really be physical and being able to hold your own as a female. So that did carry over and that helped me tremendously to be able to draw the foul. Now, the funny part of that second story is the part of that story is that if you look in, I want to say when I look back to there, I was averaging probably about 38 minutes a game and my coach never took me out. I was like, hey, can I get a breather? And so she's like, no, I need you in the game. So can you call a timeout? She's like, I don't have any right now to spare. Dang it. So that's where I learned that to go draw the foul and be able to rest on the foul line. And I would eat up as much seconds as I could and really slow down my foul shot. And that's where I would get my rest at, was at the foul line. Like, well, this isn't too bad. You know, I can play 40 minutes a game now. And I really played my way into shape. And, you know, I mean, I could run for a post player. I could run all day with the best of them. But, you know, and then, you know, there'd be times like, so she never took me out of the game. And because she really didn't have another, that style of post player left to be able to replace me with. It was more of a extended post player, more of a forward type of player. So sometimes if I did get a little tired too, I would hack a little bit and, you know, give a nice rough physical foul, one of those Bill Laimbeer fouls that, hey, you're going to know that you got fouled. So I'm going to rest on this one too. So that's kind of how that came about and how I became the most free throw. What was it, like shots in the, in
most
a season,
free throws made. Yeah, I don't know about
made or shots. Yeah, that something up, like yeah. that. Or I went to the line the most, or whatever. Because just because we didn't have those timeouts, or we didn't have those crucial type of physical post players that we had to replace. So I just had to learn how to draw those fouls and rest on the foul line.
I never thought of it that way, but that does make sense. I don't know if they had a. They may not have even had a time limit back then for when you shot free throws. So there you go. You could kind of stall for a little bit till you were ready. I think.
Now, Matt, don't date me that much, but it was 10 seconds. So it's still.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But now the other, not funny, but interesting part I was going to bring up, and I got to ask too, you did hit one 3-pointer in your career, according to our record. So, and a 3-pointer, obviously hadn't been in the game that long either, but I don't know if you even remember that. You got to, if you remember, you, the, yeah, we look, you were 1 for 3 in your career for 3-pointers back then. And then the amazing part too, is actually, if you look at our records, one of the other top scorers of all time, Miranda Crockett, just a few years ago, only hit 2 3-pointers in her whole career. So it can be done. You know, example, obviously, of, you know, that tough physical play inside and being able to pile up the points without having to, you know, shoot from far away, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, that was becoming very popular too, is the three. And, you know, it was funny, you know, I actually do remember making that three. We had gotten up on a team, I believe it was Wright State, and it was one of Terry Hall, who used to be a former UK Wildcat women's basketball coach, who coached the Valerie Steele and who's the girl from, sorry, she coached at center, Coach Lee Wise, thank you. Yes. When you get my age, you start forgetting names there, but Terry Hall was one of her last games that she coached on, and we were ahead significantly. And I was like, Coach Marlowe, I go, by the way, we're going to run a play to me. She's going to set a screen. I'm going to shoot the three because I got it right now. So when you're up like that, you can play around a little bit. So I remember saying, hey, I got the three. I'm going to really take this one. So I shot it and made it. And I was like, yeah. So excited. But I was one of those players, though, that had to learn how to play with my back to the basket. So that's how I felt most comfortable playing. So, and again, learning that down at Laughlin, you had to learn how to have a lot of shots in your bag of tricks, that you know how to be able to get your shot off, the up and under, the baby hook, and stick the elbow in the chest and be able to create some space. And there's a lot of shots with your back to the basket I had to be able to, so I can just get my shot off and to be able to create points for myself and just be that physical player.
Let's talk a little bit about the teammates that were around you on some of those teams. And I kind of keep harping back to the record book, but it's a good reference point to see what kind of teams. And you had some great, you know, teams and players that you played with. 5 of the top 25 1,000-point scorers in Morehead State history at some point, I believe, were all on a team of yours. So that speaks volumes to the teams that you played with and the quality of athletes. And I'm sure that you're still maybe some lifelong friends with some of those players.
Yeah, we still get together to this day. I know that we just had a reunion. We try to get together with some boys and girls basketball teams. I'm sure you remember Brett Roberts, PJ Nichols. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the ones that we were so close to. So we always still try to get together and do things with each other. So we try to make it back to Morehead, relive some of the glory times, and have, you know, we had some of the best times. And I still talk with Troy Lee Thomas and a couple other ones, that Kelly Wells, and, you know, people like that are really close. And Morehead, you're able to form those tight-knit bonds with people and still feel like you're not missing anything out. To this day, being 51 years old, you're not missing any time being away from college, and we haven't spoken to someone in over a year or two. But we try our best to get together, and we try our best to stay close. And, you know, this technology stuff does allow us to be close with each other. So I don't know. It's just something special that, like I said, at Morehead, you really have that family atmosphere, that family bond, that I just feel like those are my family for life.
Now, did you play, I think you played alongside Beth Oosley as well on some of your teams. She was a Morehead native too, I guess. Did you guys play in high school and then were able to play on the same Morehead State team?
Yes, we are actually elementary players together. Okay. So we started off at the University of Breckenridge until that closed down. And I believe it was my 7th grade year, and we had to merge over to Round County school system. And so we had a really good tight-knit basketball group there. I know that at Round County, our starting five was, there were all five players that started on our starting five that were all Division One. So we had Mary Brockler, who went to the University of Vanderbilt. She was our point guard. My middle sister, Joni, she went to Eastern on a track scholarship. And my sister, Jenny, she went to EKU and played basketball there. And then Beth Oosley, who was our fourth player there, she went to, first of all, she went to UK, didn't like it that much. And so she missed that, you know, that special bond and special connection that we were having at Morehead. So she transferred back after her first year at UK and transferred back to Morehead. So, and then I myself went to Morehead. So that was five people, well, on our starting five, that was all Division One athletes.
Wow. That is something to look back on and say, wow, that's, you know, not every team can say that. Let's talk a little bit about, well, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, your kind of the family atmosphere, and you have a very athletic family, obviously. And also, I believe your dad was also a professor at Morehead State University?
Yeah,
as well?
He was actually the department chair towards the right before he retired.
Okay.
So I know that Dr. DeMoss, Gerald DeMoss, took another job on the university, and that opened up as my dad took his position. So he had been a professor in the science department since 1976. And that was the year that we moved in from Minnesota. And so when we moved in, he had been a professor there for years and years on years. And then he just kind of worked his way up to the biology chair. So he was responsible for helping kids get in. And to this day, I know that they have the best science department, hands down, of getting students into professional schools like veterinary school, dentistry, medical, and their acceptance rates are so high because they have that one-on-one feel that you're not just a number, you're a name to everyone at Morehead. So they know who you are. And that kind of reminds me of a cute little story. I remember, you know, going to class myself, and, you know, it's just one of those rainy days, that cold and wet and rainy. It's like, I didn't feel like going to class that day. Guess what? My dad and my coach said, hey, where's your daughter at? I don't know, sir, but I'll find out right now. And by golly, I was there in 5 minutes.
Right. Yep. When you have that education background, you're not going to be skipping out on anything.
No.
But tell me about graduated. You went to school for, was it public relations at that? I'm not sure the exact degree of what it was called, or communications. And I know that you've been able to use that a little bit in your career after Morehead State. So tell me a little bit about that and the opportunity you've had to do some broadcasting and some communications in the communication world.
Yeah. You know, we were just, I didn't, you know how it is when you turn 18 and you're going your first year at school. It's like, I don't know what the heck I want to be. I don't know. I'm just thumbing through. At the time, we had those thick catalogs about that thick, and just kind of thumbing through, like, what do I want to do? What sounds interesting? Like, I want to do something really neat, you know? And so I kind of found my thing. I kind of was like, well, I really want to try this radio. It was called radio television. So that was one of my majors. Then I decided to double major in journalism, and with an emphasis in PR and advertising. So that was my first major on scholarship. And then after I had graduated in 92, I decided that I wanted to go back and get another major. So that's when my love of health and PE, so I got that major as well. And so that's when I started to teach class, and I, you know, was able to do that. And then my dad's like, why are you going to be going into radio television? You don't want to really do that. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I kind of do, you know, but he's like, that's just going to be a waste. I go, one day I'm going to use it. I'm going to really, you know, I'm going to get into it, you know? And so I just like to have my options open. I want to be ready. So what I know, when I first graduated, I remember doing a couple of sports spots for Channel 18. And I was like, man, these hours are not conducive for a family. Like, you have to work late nights, being able to produce a show and, you know, doing stuff like that. This isn't going to work. And that's why I decided to go back and get a help in PE and be able to teach. I was like, Dad, I promise you, I'm going to use this major. And so that has led me to, I know somebody, there was a girl at the state KHSAA. She had retired and had been doing it for years. Oh, and it was Coach Lee Wise Pruitt. She decided to switch over to the men's side of it, you know, and that's when Omar was making it big, and he was, had a good, went to, was it William and Mary? I think that's where he went. And then went over, decided to go overseas and play. And so she wanted to follow him more. So that's when Julian called and say, hey, we need somebody to, someone to step in and being able to take Lee Wise Pruitt's place. I go, well, that, you know, she's a legend. I got, that's some big shoes to fill. So I was like, I'll do my best. So I, and that's kind of how it started, was I was able just to take over. And I actually call the games as a color commentator for the KHSAA state tournament women's basketball.
How have you seen the, in doing that and just watching the games kind of over the years, how have you seen it kind of evolve, or if it's evolved? I think it has, probably, in when you were playing and the kind of the styles and things and the talent level and just the more, the opportunities that, that girls and women are also getting today. Gosh, it's almost like, you know, every game's on TV and things like that too. And if, you know, even a few years ago, if you weren't at the game, you didn't see it, you know, you had to be there. So yeah. Just tell me a little bit about what you've seen in through the state tournament and that opportunity and the kind of talent that you've been able to see in girls basketball, especially in Kentucky here.
Oh, definitely. You know, which with how the game has evolved was, you know, I remember when I first started, like, we didn't have social media. We didn't have internet. I know the year I graduated college was when the internet started, the AOL dial-up. You remember, I don't know if you remember that or not, the dial-up internet. And, you know, so that was becoming popular. But, you know, coaches, it's like the recruiting process. They knew who you are based on word of mouth, and they would come rotate and watch people play at certain venues. And, you know, nowadays, you know, with the influx of social media, it's so in the AAU tournaments that coaches can just go to one spot and see multiple players play and being able to get their name and their brand out there to really, you know, like you said, everything is on either the internet, the TV, or some type of social media platform that everybody sees everything. So just how, and it's evolved a lot. It's just because, you know, I feel like how we played was, it was more of the physical game. You had to earn every point. And not saying that people didn't have to earn every point now. I'm just saying that the game was more physical. It's like now, like you can't even hardly be physical and post someone up without saying, you know, spacing, or, you know, or it's three dribbles, pass the ball, shoot the ball. It's the fast pace of the game is so incredibly fast. And as soon as they cross half court, I mean, they got people setting on the 3-point lines, being able to either shoot, dribble, or drive, and to be able to score the basket within about 5 seconds. So the pace of the game is incredibly fast. The way that they move all the players out extended past the 3-point line, it's a lot of times they're doing a lot of 4 out, 1 in, where they have just one post player now setting screens, being able to work the high post, the pick and rolls, things like that. So it's very, very fast paced to see how quick we can wear out the other opponent. But you know, when I played, we want to set something up. We want to catch the defenders and being able to get them to, we want to make a few passes first to shift them out of their defensive stance and to be able to create like a backdoor move or, you know, something to get our opponents out of the wrong position to be able to find the gaps and be able to score. So I think now you don't see a whole lot of people shooting that mid-range game, like around the foul line and things right on the inside of the perimeter. You just don't see that a lot. And I think people, you know, these younger players are starting to take a little bit of notice because in that area, it's wide open. So, you know, they're learning to being able to learn that mid-range game all over again.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, you mentioned as we kind of transition here, you've already mentioned the teaching. And so tell us a little bit about your job now and what you love about your position and you get to work with young people and just kind of give us an overview of where you've landed and what you're doing now.
Well, funny you mentioned that. I have about 3 more years till I retire from public education. So I have been a health and PE teacher for about 24 years now at Frederick Douglass High School and here in Lexington, the new high school. So I really, really enjoy establishing the relationships, and I love the professionalism that I get to work with every day. Just being able to make a difference in kids' lives and being able to make those connections and being able to pour in the knowledge that I have into my students. And even though I'm not coaching currently right now, just because, you know, being a full-time mom, that's enough for me at the moment, but I've already had that coaching experience. I've already been there, done that. So I'm at that point now where I've moved from being successful, being able to move to what's significant now. So being significant is where, you know, the phase of my life where I'm at, being able to transfer my knowledge and speak life into a lot of these kids here in Lexington at Frederick Douglass and being able to help mentor those types of kids that are just wanting to be a sponge and just being able to absorb all that knowledge that I have and, you know, just trying to make things relevant for them and just being that type of mentor, just being able that have been there, done that type of thing to being able to, you know, help kids move them through to the next phase of their life.
I have not been inside Frederick Douglass. I've driven by it several times, but obviously a newer high school, it's got to be pretty wonderful in there. It looks huge, obviously from the outside. So I don't know if it's the biggest school in Lexington or not, but they definitely did a good job there building that school. And I think it was needed over there. I don't know how many schools are on that side of the city, but I think maybe they had a need for some transition there and getting those kids to another school on the kind of the east side there.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that Henry Clay was the closest closer to the east side and it was so packed. It was like 2,400 kids and they were like busting out at the seams there. So there was a huge need to build on this side and there is still more growth happening. They just finished an elementary school right off the exit there. And now they're building another middle school and another elementary school by the Polo Club closer to the Costco side. Mm-hmm. And then right by Costco side, they're building another Baptist Health Hospital. So the growth is, you know, it's growing exponentially over here. So there is a huge need, a lot of families moving into the area. And like I said, this, you know, that school is beautiful. It's probably the most beautiful school, you know, probably the biggest school that I have been at with a lot of just the super students that we're now, the type of teaching that we do now is called an academy school. Mm-hmm. So basically what that means is we have a biomed academy within our school. We have a freshman academy, we have a professional services, and then we have an instructional technology academy. So we're more career oriented type of school where we try to expose kids to those types of jobs or learning. And a lot of times we can get them the certifications they need before they even graduate high school and be able to place them in a college or in a certifiable job. So that's kind of the direction of the high schools. That's what's new now.
And they have, as the health and PE part of it, do they have an opportunity? Because there are a lot of kids that may be interested in teaching, like yourself, health and PE, or going into some type of avenue in the health and PE world. Is that an opportunity for them there?
So yeah, like I said, we have a biomedical academy, and then we also have a health science academy as well. So they have those opportunities for those health careers. And then also in our professional services, we have our own little community it's called the Teaching Academy. So there's like a business academy, there's like a teaching academy. So yeah, I mean, definitely. So they get to get life job experience while they're in high school to see, do I really want to do that? Or yes, I really have a passion and a love for doing that kind of thing. So it's a good exposure to kind of get a good feel of, you know, of getting the kids a firsthand opportunity to get them a head start in front of everyone else.
That's really good. One last thing I meant to mention earlier about when we talked about your family and your brother, Joe, I guess when we talked about him being in the a major league pitcher and all that, were you a Cardinals fan back in the day? I know he was a pretty good athlete there and pitched for the Cardinals, well, some other teams. And so kind of update us on him and growing up and being able to have in your family, I guess, kind of a role model, if you will, as well, in being an athlete too.
Yeah, funny you mentioned that, because that would be my other success story on, you know, how I became a pretty good athlete is because of my brother. I know when I was probably like early elementary, I would say like 6, 7, or 8 years old, like I would come home and my dad and my brother would always be pitching and my dad would be catching him. And, you know, they're working on certain pitches. They're, you know, they're really super serious about their workouts and stuff. And I'm just sitting there as a little girl with my hands crossed, like, hey dad, what about me? You know? So I was like, I had to learn, to be able to get my dad's attention, that I had to learn, like, all right, it's my turn now. So I would like cut in there and it's like, all right, Joe, it's my turn. I want my dad time, you know? And so when he would come home from teaching, I would be there with a glove in my hand. And it was like, I'm first, Joe, you know? And so my dad and I, we would play a lot of catch in the yard and, you know, being able to, you know, I want my dad time and, you know, and, you know, spend time with him. So, you know, that it kind of started off that way. Cause that was actually my first sport was baseball. I had to play with the baseball kids at the boys, and because they didn't have girls softball then. So I had to learn how to, you know, make my way into that way. So with that being said, you know, and then my brother, when my dad wasn't home, I was the one that I had to catch my brother. And so that was, we used to live on the corner of East Main Street. It would have been kind of across the street from that Mexican restaurant. It used to be at Hardee's back in the day.
Oh, okay. Which is La Finca now. La Finca. On Main Street. Okay.
So it's now a parking lot, I think now, but there was a nice brick home right there. And we would, you know, I'd have to catch my brother. And I was like, I don't really want to do this. Like, no, he's like, get over there. You're going to catch me and I'm going to throw you some heat. I was like, oh no. You know, I was like, no, don't bring it. Don't bring it. I was really young at the time too. And he was 5 years older than me. So he would throw the heat and sting my hand on purpose, you know, and like, oh, be tough, Julie, be tough. I was like, all right. So he'd throw me, you know, certain pitches. I try to catch the curveball. And then like, and then he wouldn't tell me because he thinks he's slick. So he wouldn't tell me, and he would throw in a knuckleball. Well, I didn't know what a knuckleball was, but so it would come in there and just drop right at my shins, and it would hit me right in my shins. I was like, oh my God. And I would start crying. So they're like, no, get back there. You're going to catch some more. So he'd throw me more, and he'd sneak in a knuckleball again. I was like, stop doing that. And so I missed the ball, and I couldn't catch the knuckleball. And so, and I told you, we live right next to the Christian church there. And I missed the ball because he threw me up one of those, you know, the pitch that just dropped, and it went right through the church window.
Oh, no.
And then my brother tried to blame it on me. I was like, because she didn't catch the ball. I was like, no, no, no. So anyway, so well, yeah.
Hopefully God forgave you for that one, right?
But anyway, that's how kind of how it all started. But he was able to be blessed with a nice career in professional baseball and with the Cardinals. So it was a really good spot to land because it was only a 6-hour drive, and we were able to make a lot of the connections to be able to wherever he pitched at. We spent summers being able to travel pretty close distance to be able to watch him be a first row seat in all this action. And I guess his biggest memory was when his rookie year, when he was pitching for the Cardinals, I believe it was a Trivial Pursuit question, Matt. It was the only rookie to be able to start the first and the seventh and the last game of the World Series.
Wow.
So
was that 1987?
I believe. Okay. Yeah. And that was against the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah. It wasn't the first game. I actually, believe it or not, not a Trivial Pursuit question, but I'm from originally from Minnesota. And so my dad took me to game two of that World Series. I don't know. You said he pitched game one.
One and seven.
Okay. Yeah. We were at game two of in the Metrodome that year. So interesting. Very interesting. But I was only about 7 or 8 then, but I'm sure I saw him down on the field then probably.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed Minnesota. That was such a neat place. And the Metrodome is unmatchable to the volume of the noise. You remember the noise level
my ears
was like tremendous. Like,
and I was just a kid. My ears were ringing for 3 days after those games up there, especially in the World Series. So yes.
But yes. I didn't know that you lived in Minnesota, because that was one of our stops along the way where my dad got his postdoctorate degree was the University of Minnesota. So we had spent a couple of years up there and really loved it and loved that community up there. So we were natives of St. Paul there.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. I have a lot of family still up there. And I was born a little bit south of there, but I only lived there for a couple of years before we moved to Tennessee. But anyway, connection there. So, well, I really appreciate you joining me for our podcast and giving us a little insight on your life and career, and certainly appreciate it. Being a Moorhead native and staying an Eagle, still an Eagle, as we always say. And so I want to thank you so much and good luck to, hopefully, as things kind of get back to normal for you in the teaching world and everything else this year. So
that would be nice. And I cannot wait to watch the Eagles play and get, you know, excited to watch. I know the basketball is off to a good start, and excited to watch, I guess, the football play in the springtime now. So yes, which will be really bizarre, but
we will. We'll have a volleyball, soccer, football, everything pretty much except for basketball. And,
you are going to be only one busy guy.
We'll be in the spring. Yeah, we may need some help.
I gotcha. I gotcha. So.
Anyway, that's going to wrap it up here on Talon Talk. Glad to have Julie Muntz, former Moorhead State women's basketball player and a Hall of Fame member, Moorhead State, joining us. And once again, we want to thank her. And please join us again next time as we continue to talk to our alums and current Eagles as we bring you interesting stories here on Talon Talk. So once again, thank you very much and join us again.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
This episode of Talon Talk is presented by the Morehead State Legacy Club. The Legacy Club is a part of the Eagle Athletic Family Fund and provides former Morehead State University student athletes the opportunity to maintain a lifelong connection with MSU athletics. This is an exclusive group of former MSU student athletes who understand the commitment and spirit to be an Eagle. If you are an MSU student athlete, make sure to join your former teammates in supporting the growth and success of MSU athletics. Visit MSUEagles.com today.